Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is a 30-minute special edition of Franchise Today. Tonight, my guest is renowned psychologist and best-selling author of Profitable Partnerships, Greg Nathan. Greg and his team of psychologists at the Franchise Relationships Institute have spent the past 20 years researching the science of successful franchise relationships. Working with hundreds of franchise systems around the world, they have developed some remarkable tools and models to help franchisors create profitable partnerships. Greg is with me here tonight, live from Australia, to talk about his upcoming event, Profitable Partnerships Franchise Relations Bootcamp, to be held on May 25th and 26th in Denver, Colorado, as well as to discuss franchise relationships in general. Greg, welcome to Franchise Today.
Hi, how are you, Paul?
Good. It's been a while since we last spoke, I think back in January prior to the IFA, and we never did get to run into each other at the event.
I did see you wandering around, but I hid.
There you go. I think a lot of
we didn't know. I missed you there. It was a great event, that IFA convention. Hmm.
It sure was a great event. I was glad to see that the attendance was up over last year, and it was really a positive buzz abound, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So how can we make this useful for our listeners tonight?
You know, the listeners are the entire franchise community, mm-hmm. and I know you have an upcoming event. So why don't we just take a couple minutes to explain what the upcoming event is, where it's at, and when it is, and then we'll go from there.
Sure. Look, this will probably be about the fifth time I've run an event like this in the States. We're calling this one a Profitable Partnerships Boot Camp. It's 2 days, and it'll be very practical. We'll have 100 franchise or executives coming together, probably mainly from the operational departments, you know, VP operations, senior field consultants, and so on. And we're going to be talking about how can we support franchisees in the most effective way? There'll be a lot of my role during the 2 days is partly a presenter, where I will be presenting some of our research and presenting some concepts and ideas. But also a lot of the 2 days is interactive, where we get people in small groups and we use various facilitation techniques to get people sharing best practices amongst each other and capturing those. And what we do is we then record the ideas that come out of the groups. We take up some very specific topics. We drill down very deep. We capture the ideas, and then we recirculate those back to people. So not only are they getting the experience of my team and the research we've been doing, but we're capturing the experience of the group. And when you get a group of 100 people together, sometimes you can get over 1,000 years of experience in the room. And so my role as a facilitator is to capture that experience and wring out all the goodness and all the practical tips that we can. Does that give you an idea of the process? It's pretty exciting. People... By the end of day two, people are usually pretty pumped.
Right, I would say so. I never gave it a thought about 1,000 years of experience. That's overwhelming.
Yes. I may be exaggerating here, but I'm just trying to remember the actual number we came up with last time when we had a large group, and it was up near 1,000 years, I think. It is remarkable when you think about like how much practical experience people do bring to these courses and how much of that is wasted when you've just got someone presenting PowerPoint slides at people, you know, for a day or 2 days. I couldn't think of anything more boring. But if we're able to actually get people really reflecting deeply on what has actually worked for them and for their companies and why has it worked so well, because often we don't reflect on why things have worked, and also why things haven't worked. We tend to sometimes rush on, oh, that didn't work very well, let's rush on and fix it and keep moving and not really understand where are the lessons here and how can we ensure that they're not repeated. So through the boot camp, if we can get someone sharing, look, we had a really bad experience and this is why it went bad and this is what we've learned from it, imagine the value of that to the rest of the room to hear that. I mean, we could be preventing quite a few $1,000s in lost costs.
Absolutely. You know, we have a lot of startup franchisors and emerging franchisors that listen to Franchise Today, and some of them really haven't been around the block yet and haven't even been to the corner of the block yet. In your opinion, how important is how important are franchise relationships to the growth of a franchise network?
Yes, okay. It's a good question. It's a question I sometimes put to executives, and so I want you to really think about commercially. If we sort of looked at the relationship and we had a franchise company which had bad relationships, and I define that as you've got a culture there where there's a lack of trust and you've got a lack of commitment from people to engage with the network and engage with the franchisor. I'd say that's a culture of bad relationships, as opposed to a culture where we've got high levels of trust and we've got high levels of engagement and commitment. What are the commercial implications of that? And when people really sit down and reflect on it and reflect on their experience, they pretty much unanimously come to the conclusion that it's commercially extremely damaging when we've got unhealthy franchise relationships. And some of the reasons are communication is not good, not only between franchisor and franchisee, but between franchisees themselves. Sometimes when the relationships are not good, franchisees tend to bunker down and say, look, I don't really want to have anything to do with the brand, with the meetings and with the other franchisees and the franchisor. So they stop going to meetings, they stop participating in webinars and so on. You don't get any of that sharing of best practices. Also, people can start to become apathetic about standards, and we see, you know, commitment to customer service and commitment just to delivering an excellent service or a product starts to drop when the relationships are poor, because again, that's a natural follow-on from a lack of engagement. We also see franchise sales drop off in terms of the selling of new franchises, because any franchisee worth their salt, a prospective franchisee worth their salt, is going to do their research. They're going to ask around with as many of the existing franchisees as possible. And the best question that they could possibly ask is, if you had your time over, would you do this again? Now, when we find the relationship is strained, people are more likely to say, no, I wouldn't do it again. And you can make your own conclusions about that. Sometimes they'll go as far as to say, I definitely would recommend you not proceed with the franchise. There's a whole lot of reasons why good franchise relations make sense. They're vital for running an effective business.
Right. Now, I know, and a lot of people know, that I'm a strong proponent of interdependent franchise relationships, and I often tell startup and emerging franchisors that it's always better to convince rather than demand. And I know a lot of mature organizations feel very frustrated at times because they're trying to put through a certain initiative or a certain program, and a lot of franchisees, especially the older ones, don't want to come on board. Makes it difficult to get the younger ones to come on board, and they spend a lot of time spinning their wheels and try to get into a demand situation, which, as I know, and as you know, doesn't work very well, especially with some very strong-minded franchisees. What are a couple of steps that a young franchisor can take to position themselves for not becoming in that position down the road? How could they start out on the right foot in establishing relationships, good franchise relationships, and then building upon them?
Sure. Okay. You've touched on a couple of things there. One is, you know, laying the foundations for healthy franchise relations, but also how to get people's buy-in when you're driving new initiatives and change. And I might come back to that in a sec. Just in terms of the first one, your question about, you know, how to establish good relations, I think probably the one word that gets to the heart of the whole thing and summarises 15 years of research just on this topic of why relationships break down, the word is respect. So I'll just let that hang for a minute. It's a beautiful Aretha Franklin song, you know, R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Right.
And what we've found is that franchisees get incredibly frustrated if they feel that the attitude of the franchisor executives and the field consultants and so on is patronising. They get incredibly frustrated if they feel that they're being treated like employees of the organisation. Many franchisees left corporate life. Some of them have been in quite high levels in organisations. They've left because they're sick of the politics. They're sick of, they will tell you, you know, I'm sick of working for an idiot, you know, a boss who really, who I think I'm smarter than. And,
right.
And therefore I'm going to go out and start my own, you know, run my own business. And the last thing they want is to feel like they've got some idiot telling them what to do, particularly if they're being told to initiate or invest, you know, initiate a new program or invest in their business in an idea that has not been properly proven. So having respect for the franchisee as a business person is extremely important. And I think it's good for the franchisor team to talk about these things from time to time internally and talk about, look, what is the right attitude that we should be taking towards our franchisees? It, of course, like all attitudes in organisations, it starts at the top. So the culture always flows downwards, and if we're getting an unhealthy culture in a franchise company, you know, when the executives come to me and ask me, how do we fix this? My first advice is take a look in the mirror, because there's probably something you're doing in your behaviour or your attitudes that's corrupting the culture. Now, sometimes I don't like to hear that, but it's the truth. And I think sometimes I may not be doing it consciously, but when you listen to the language that's used in the boardrooms and in conversations about when they're driving through a change through the organisation, If the language is condescending, if the language lacks respect, it's going to come across when other people in the organisation are dealing with the franchisees. They pick it up. So respect is incredibly important. Tone of voice is amazingly important. And your tone of voice really communicates a lot. And I think I've seen this in meetings frequently when franchise or executives are presenting ideas or responding to franchisee questions in a meeting, and the executive might be feeling a bit frustrated. They may be feeling, why am I having to answer these questions? We've already thought through the strategy. Why don't they just get on and do it? And if you're thinking this as an executive, it comes across in your tone of voice. It's very easy for a group to suddenly become hostile, because they're picking up, well, hang on a minute, don't give us that attitude. We're independent investors in this business, and we expect to have our questions answered. So patience, a non-defensive attitude, is very important when you're responding to franchisee questions in meetings or in one-on-one. So these things sound pretty basic, but I've found that it's the basics that make the difference. And when relationships break down, when you talk to the parties and you find out what's really upset you, why are you angry, Why are you frustrated? If you listen carefully to what they're saying, often what's underlying the frustration is a feeling that they haven't been listened to, that they haven't been treated with respect. It's a very fundamental human need. There's basically three human needs when you boil it all down that creates a satisfied person. And one of them is to feel that they're being treated with respect. Another one, that people have a strong need to feel that they belong. And of course, franchising is perfect for that because a healthy franchising culture gives people that sense of belonging, being part of a business community. And by the way, I think community is the right word to use when franchisors are talking to their franchisees. I prefer that rather than use the word family, because mm-hmm. I think families are often dysfunctional, if we're honest. I think business communities are a good way to frame a franchise relationship. And the third fundamental need people have is to have a sense of meaning and purpose, meaningful work. And I think, again, franchising does, I get pretty excited, you know, always when I'm talking about franchising and working with franchisors and franchisees, because most of the franchisees are doing meaningful work in their local communities. And I think franchisors who support their franchisees in local area marketing programs, community involvement, also it boosts the franchisees' sense of commitment to the brand, and they're feeling that they're really doing something useful with their lives. So there's a few thoughts on some of the real building blocks of healthy franchising cultures. Now, I'm battling on a bit. Can I continue? I just wanted to say something about driving change through into your franchise groups. Because you touched on that earlier, that sometimes sure. you get pushback. And right. I think the pushback often comes if there's an attitude like we just talked about of disrespect, or you just have to do this because we're telling you have to do it because we're somehow superior to you. That's not going to go down too well. The other thing is I think franchisees need to have evidence that the initiative or the change is commercially being thought through, and there's evidence that it works. So the franchisor should preferably have piloted thoroughly any new initiatives, preferably in a corporate store, but also with some franchisees as well, and run them as a pilot and perhaps give those franchisees that are piloting the program some benefits as to why they should pilot that, just in case it doesn't work out too well for them. Right. Also, I think involving the franchisees in the planning process is important. Often there's confusion over the two words consultation and consensus. They are totally different concepts. So when I talk about consulting with franchisees, I'm not talking about consensus. Consensus is where you get everybody's agreement to something before you proceed with it, and that's right. that's obviously impossible or highly impractical in a franchise group, because people are going to have different needs, different opinions. You're never going to get consensus, or you certainly won't get it in a reasonable period of time. You're going to burn up too much time and resources trying to get consensus. The consultation is basically asking people for their input, and that can be at various levels. It might be getting some input on the concept. We're thinking of going down a certain track. We just want to get people's thoughts on whether they think this is or isn't a good track to go down and why. We're not going to make a decision on this just at the moment. We're just gathering some information, and we'll get back to you when we've made our final decision. Now, that's consultation. You make it clear to people that you will make the final decision, but you are listening to their thoughts and their input. And franchisees have actually said to me, I cannot believe that our franchisor went ahead and made this decision to go down, it could have been, to change a supplier or introduce a new product range. And I say, I can't believe they made that decision without consulting us first, because we've got far more experience at the front line of the business on how customers are reacting to these things, and we could have given them some really useful insights that would have made this program so much more successful. So again, what the franchisee is saying is that because you didn't consult me, you don't respect me. That's the message they get. And also they're saying, because you didn't consult me, you're an idiot, because I've got some commercially useful information that could have helped this program be more successful. Why on earth wouldn't you ask for our input?
Right. You know, one of the things that often comes up in talking with fairly new franchisors, they can't understand how the relationship starts to break apart. And I think a lot of times it's because the franchisor is inconsistent in how they're working with the franchisee from the onset. And my point is, you know, there's a lot of great software programs out there that have built-in processes and procedures in working franchise candidates through the process. There's tremendous follow-up. There's timed email. There's timed phone calls. There's, you know, just all kinds of interaction. There's homework. There's deadlines to meet. And then all of a sudden, the franchisee plucks down, you know, $25,000, $30,000 on a franchise fee, signs the franchise agreement, and then there's radio silence. And all of a sudden, that courtship just abruptly ends, and there's this silent period for a month and a half, 2 months. And usually what happens is the franchise, the new franchisee now calls up and says, hey, what's the next step? What do we need to do? Do I need to be looking for a location? And it seems like there's a lot of stumbling around. And I know some of the advice that I give franchisors is make sure that the lead generation process into the working with the candidate process into their initial stages as a new franchisee are seamless. Because if they're not, you're going to come across as just having been concerned more with getting their money than you are about building a relationship and having them part of your franchise community. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Paul, let's be honest. That is often the truth.
Right. Oh, it is. Absolutely.
So there's no surprise when you say you're going to come across as though that's your attitude. That is often the attitude. It's sad but true.
Right.
So franchisors, I think young franchisors, young and old franchisors need to understand that when you're granting a franchise, to take the attitude that you're selling a product, treating the franchise like a product, is not a very healthy approach. Because when you sell a product, typically, that's what you do. You sell the product and you move on. And you try and sell the product to somebody else. That's what salesmen do. And that's how they make their money, and that's how sales works. When you're granting a franchise, you're actually starting a relationship with somebody. So if we can encourage that whole shift, I guess it's a shift in thinking that the franchise is actually a relationship.
Sure.
And you're entering into a relationship. So this is the beginning of the relationship. And I think there needs to be a lot more discussion between the franchise sales departments and the franchise operations departments. There's a real opportunity for these folks to be working a lot more closely together. In a healthy, well-organized franchise system, the operations department is very involved in the recruitment of the franchisees, and they will have often the power with the final sign-off, because they basically have to work with these people for 5, maybe 10 years, and it only makes sense for them to be involved in the process from the get-go. So that's something practical that can be done. Now, sometimes the franchise salespeople don't like that. They feel it's interference and so on, but get over it. You know, if they're having a long-term commitment and career with this particular organisation, they need to work closely with the ops team. So,
I
think that's
the way I explained it. I said it's kind of like, you know, dating somebody, leading into engagement, getting married, and all the hoopla that goes up until the day of the wedding, and then for the next 2 months, the two of you don't speak together. I said, that rarely occurs, but yet it seems to occur more often than not in a franchise relationship because it takes, you know, 2 or 3 months to get the process moving and actually working towards them becoming franchisees. And that has to change. And I agree with you. Operations does need to be more involved. They are working with the franchisee more than the franchise salesperson will, who often usually worked with them for 2 or 3 months in that process. But it's the operations person that's going to basically, you know, quote unquote, live with them for the next 2, 5, 10 years, and are going to go through a lot of trials and tribulations with that franchisee. So it is important that that part of the relationship be established from day one.
Yeah. There was a beautiful quote in one of our surveys, a franchisee. We were asking the franchisees, tell us about your thoughts on, you know, the service you're getting and how you feel about belonging to the group, the franchise system. This guy wrote, when I started in this network, my franchisor treated me like royalty. Now I'm treated like royalties. I think it does reflect that sort of, you know, just before signing up, we're all over them, you know, we're treating them like our best friend and so on, and then once the deal gets signed, it's like, okay, off you go.
And then the only communications is when they're asking for their royalty payments.
Well, that's how the franchisor obviously is not intending to come across that way, but that's how it can be experienced by the franchisee. You just basically want the money. And again, this comes back to this respect issue that I've been banging on about. The franchisee can feel that they're just being treated like a number, or they're just a revenue source for the franchisor. But when you were recruiting me, we talked about my dreams and what I wanted to achieve for my family, and it was fantastic. We don't have those conversations anymore.
Right, absolutely. Well, I know there are a lot of franchisors that don't want to be perceived as such, and a lot of times really don't know what they might be missing. And I assume by their involvement in the franchise relations boot camp, they'll learn some things that certainly will put them on the road towards healthy franchise relationships. What are some of the things that attendees can look to take away with them and use in a practical application in their franchise system from
your
franchise?
Yeah, so we'll be talking a lot about, I used this word facilitation earlier on. I really believe the franchisor has a lot of power and a lot of influence in being as a facilitator. Now, what a facilitator does is gets people talking, gets people communicating, and we'll be talking a lot about in meetings and conferences how franchisors can facilitate communication between the franchisee and also between themselves and the franchisees. So I'll be teaching some techniques on how to get franchisees sharing best practices with each other, setting up group mentoring programs where franchisees are helping each other. We'll talk about what drives franchisee validation, which is this topic we were touching on a few minutes ago. What does the research tell us about what's likely to make a franchisee recommend you to their friends, family, or colleagues? And there are actually five things that our research has found that if the franchisee is being satisfied in these five areas, they're far more likely to recommend the franchise system to other people. So we'll be covering that off. We'll talk also a little bit in the recruitment of franchisees. There's some techniques about interviewing franchisees, knowing what questions to ask, what are the attributes that you should be looking for in a franchisee, what are the negative omens to watch out for, which are likely to lead to problems further down the track. So we'll talk a little bit about those things. We'll talk a bit. I touched on this whole idea of a healthy franchising culture before. What is culture? How can you create a performance-driven culture in your organisation? Culture is amazing, Paul. You were talking earlier about influencing people. Culture is the most powerful influencer of human behaviour. And remember, when you're a teenager and people might have kids themselves, how peer group pressure influences behaviour in teenagers. Well, it continues right throughout life. And the people that we mix with, the attitudes of the people that we mix with, influence our behaviour. So if you've got a certain culture in your organisation which is task-focused, it's achievement-focused, it's constructive, then you are going to be more likely, if you're operating in that environment, to be constructive, to be task-focused, to be achievement-focused. If you're in an environment which is negative, where people tend to blame each other, people tend to play the victim, then you're more likely to take on some of those behaviours. So we'll talk about how do you create that healthy culture which creates performance. We're going to talk a lot about field support. Now, field support is, the folks that are going out visiting franchisees or talking on the phone to franchisees. How do you make sure that that support is relevant to the franchisees? Mm-hmm. How do you make sure that that support is adding value? And the best test of that is, if you were to ask the franchisee, would you pay, if you had to pay out of your own pocket for that field consultant to come and visit you, would you pay? And most of the time they probably say no. But we know really good field consultants who deliver exceptional value. And when we talk to the franchisees about those visits, the franchisees say, we get great value from those field visits and we'd be happy to pay. And in fact, they are paying. They're paying through their royalty fees. So we're going to talk about how do you make sure that you're getting a great return on investment for the field consultants that are going out. You're paying their petrol. And in some groups, we were with a group the other day, and they calculated they spend $3.5 million a year just on field consultants. So wow. Obviously it's incredibly important that the field consultants are focused on what their mission is in going out to visit franchisees. There's been a trend in recent years for the field consultant role to move to be more than just compliance focused and to be more coaching focused, where the purpose of the visit is to help the franchisee set goals and help hold them accountable to those goals. So we'll talk in the boot camp about goal setting, about coaching skills and how to keep people inspired and focused on the things they want to achieve. We'll talk about conflict. You were saying earlier, Paul, about the relationship often starts off great and then there's this silence. We know through our research that the relationship does go through stages, and we'll be talking about six stages in the franchise relationship and how to manage franchisees through each of these stages. So I call this the franchisee factor, and so some of your listeners may have come across this franchisee factor curve, which has these six stages, which starts off in glee, and at its lowest point, I call it the free stage, where the franchisee is pushing back and saying, well, you ask them to do something, and they say, well, make me. Because they start to exert their independence, and at that point, they often probably feel that they're not getting value for money from their royalty fees. Their confidence is high. They may feel that they know more about running the business than the franchisor does, and in some cases they may. But there's more to the fees that they're paying, are going not just towards operational support, but obviously they're going towards the use of the brand and the systems and so on. So the franchisee sometimes gets in a bit of a mindset that, this is all too difficult, I don't know if I want to be part of this anymore. And that's where the skill comes in, where the field consultants and the executives need to be able to sit down and talk with the franchisee in a very honest and frank way about how they're feeling, about the value of being part of the group, and help them to reset some goals. And, through having those respectful, frank conversations, you can get some significant movement in people's attitudes, and then they move to what I call the we stage, which is that interdependence you touched on earlier, Paul. Interdependence is about together we can achieve more than if we were operating independently. There's been a lot of research around this that proves absolutely conclusively that when people have this attitude of, I want to be part of this group and I want to get as much value as I can from the group, and I also want to contribute to the group because I understand what goes around comes around. When you get people bringing this attitude to the relationship, we get some significant breakthroughs in performance. We get innovation, we get inspiration, and we get high levels of customer service at the front line. And that's what we all want, isn't it?
That's
what every franchisor wants. They want to make sure that the brand is being looked after and the customers are having a great experience. And when they went into franchising, of course, what they didn't know, many of them, was they were giving away their power to directly influence the experience that the customers are getting at the front line. And that's why these relationships are so critical. Because it's interesting, there's been some research done recently in New Zealand by a colleague, and what he's found is that, his name's Ken Billett, and Ken has found that where the franchisor may have a reasonably good grasp on what the brand is trying to deliver to the customers, when he interviewed the franchisees about what's your understanding of the brand and the brand promise and the brand values, we don't get a very clear understanding at all. He said there was an incredible amount of confusion in franchisee land about what their brand stands for. And then he went the next step and interviewed the employees of the franchisee and said, tell me about what your understanding is of the brand and what the brand stands for and what our values are. And he just got blank looks, you know, from most of the staff. They couldn't put it into words. They didn't quite understand. So we're getting this watering down of the brand message as we get further away from the franchisor. And ironically, the people who we're looking to deliver the brand to the customers, which is the employees, are the ones that understand it the least. So there's huge opportunities, I think, for franchisors to do a better job at educating the frontline people about their brands. People confuse the brand with the logo. They think, oh, our brand is pink and, you know, it's got squiggly writing on it. Well, that's the logo and that's kind of part of the whole brand thing. But, of course, the brand is really your reputation out in the market, and that goes way beyond your logo.
Right.
And we'll be talking about that at the boot camp too. And this is one I'm pretty passionate about because, again, what we've found in the organisations that really understand this and put a lot of effort and time into educating their franchisees, and they also take responsibility for educating the employees of the franchisees about the brand and what the brand stands for and what this means in terms of behaviour, they're the ones that are achieving. You know, they're the ones that are getting growth year on year. The ones that are sort of, you know, expect people just to get it somehow are the ones where they're getting confusion in the market over what their brand stands for, and they're getting that inconsistent delivery at the customer end of the business, which, is, of course, is, you know, the antithesis of what franchising is all about.
Absolutely. I agree. I know when you made a good point about the brand, and it is your reputation, and it's what is perceived by the consumer as what your reputation is about. And perception often, as we know, is reality.
Yeah, I studied psychology for 12 years, Paul, and I left with this one quote one of my professors said to me. He said, Greg, when perception meets reality, reality always comes out second best.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of stayed with me. It's so true that we all do this. We behave in life according to what we believe is going on around us. And often it's not the truth. It's just our interpretation of the truth. And if franchisees are under pressure and they're under stress and they're not properly informed of what's going on, they jump to their own conclusions. They fill in the blanks. And they, unfortunately, they often fill in the blanks with wrong conclusions and wrong information. They can start boxing at shadows. They start making interpretations about what the franchisor's intentions are. You know, they start seeing spooks under the bed and so on. So franchisors really have a huge opportunity in terms of communication and communicating better. And you can never communicate enough, particularly during times of change. And you were touching on earlier, Paul, about, you know, technology and the tools and that are out there that can enable franchisors to communicate in various ways, webinars, of course, you know, email, websites and so on. But there's nothing like good old-fashioned phone call. Get on the phone to someone, particularly if you're sensing a bit of tension in the relationship, just get straight on the phone and say, hey, I picked up, there seemed to be a bit of an attitude behind that email I just got from you. Can we just talk about this? What's on your mind?
Absolutely, because too many people hide behind email. I agree. Oh, there is something like the phone.
Unbelievable, yeah. And of course, you know, sending out an email, particularly a barbed email, if you get a bit of an emotional email and you respond, the franchisee's likely to forward that on to, you know, 50 of his mates or her mates, and that can be forwarded on again. Whereas the phone call can just nip the problem in the bud, and, you know, and then the relationship is preserved. And again, just to come back to where I started, this issue of respect, it's a show of respect.
Sure it is.
Like, I respect you so much that I'm going to take the time to call you and talk to you. And that takes a bit of courage sometimes.
And the issue is, too, which always cracks me up about people relying on email, is that there are very few people out there that are well-written enough to get their messages across exactly how they want to get them across. So by sending an email, you're also leaving it open to interpretation that often can be kind of misguided a little bit.
Well, misinterpreted, absolutely. And emotions, do strange things to our ability to communicate as well. So when we get emotional, sometimes we don't express things as well as we could. And putting it in writing, it just makes it a public record forever.
Absolutely. And I tell them, you know, I said, before you hit that send button, you know, put it aside. Save it as a draft. Go back to it an hour later. Read it again and say, do I really want to send this out? Should it be done over the phone? Should I wait? Too often than not, they hit that button and send it out and regret it afterwards, and they spend more time.
Yeah, there's about 4 minutes of bliss after you've pushed the button when you go, oh, I really showed them, you know? And then reality starts to hit home. My God, what have I done?
Yeah, I have a good colleague of mine, Joe Caruso, that is kind of like my coach. I guess he is my coach. And I was in an emotional tizzy one day and posted something on LinkedIn, and he caught it right away, and he called me up, and he said, let's talk about this. And we talked about it. He says, all right, you got it off your chest. He said, delete the discussion. and he was right. And he was absolutely right, and I learned a big, valuable lesson that day from him. And fortunately, I didn't do any damage that I needed to do a bunch of damage control on. So
yeah, I saw that LinkedIn post, actually.
Yeah.
I'm only kidding.
I wouldn't be surprised, yeah, Greg, because that I'm on, I see your name pop up that you're on. Of course, I might be sitting here in my office in San Antonio, but you might be in Prague or Madrid or in or whatever. So I do know we're on quite a bit, and I see you a lot on there. We need to spend more time in the future because we both believe in best practices for franchising. We both believe in the interdependent relationships. And
I think if I could just say one thing, Paul, just as we're wrapping up, this thing about relationships, I think often it's mistaken as a bit of a wussy sort of thing.
That, right.
Yeah, oh, you know, it's all warm and love and fuzz and, you know, we're all going to hold hands and so on. In my experience, having good relationships in business takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of guts. And it often means that you need to fess up and when you've made a mistake and say, oh, look, I could have done that better. I apologize. How do we resolve this thing and move forward together and start making some money for everybody? So I think for anyone who thinks, oh, this is for the bleeding hearts or someone, I'd ask them to think again. The boot camp is going to be a very practical 2 days. We're going to be talking about real issues that take place in real franchise systems and real solutions to running a good franchise system that makes money for everybody.
Absolutely.
So I just thought I'd mention that, Paul, that we are talking about commercial realities here. And also, it'll enable people to have a better life. Relationships are a core part to our lives. I mean, when you look back on your life and you say, well, what was good about my life? What were the high points? Where do they get the meaning and the satisfaction? People inevitably fall back on the relationships that they had, and their biggest disappointments are often revolving around the relationships that didn't work out. So I think even at that level of meaning and purpose, having good relationships is incredibly important. And I don't think you can have fun in business and have satisfaction in business if you don't have good relationships. So it's another good reason why people need to learn these techniques. And you never stop learning. I mean,
no.
I've been researching this area for a long time, and I still make mistakes and stuff up my relationships. And my staff and my family will tell me to pull my head in from time to time. And I've got to look in the mirror and say, well, yeah, they've got a point. Thank you.
Right.
Thanks for the feedback.
Before your head gets chopped off, right?
Well, sometimes your head gets too big. Sometimes it gets chopped off. But I think that feedback is important to keeping things real and keeping us grounded. And often the franchisees, when they give that feedback, even though it's tough to receive when you're the franchisor, and I've been a franchisor, I understand how tough it can be, it's probably the best thing often for the business. It keeps the corporate ego in check. Maybe we're not as good as, you know, it's all very well to put out these PR releases and advertisements and these articles that appear in the business magazines, you know, telling the world how fantastic we are. But we all know a lot of that is PR spin, and we've got to stay grounded and keep working on how can we continue to improve. And feedback is the best way to keep us improving.
Absolutely. I agree. Hey, Greg, we went over our time, but that's fine because it was definitely some great information.
Thank you.
And I thank you for being my guest tonight and for sharing that great information about the upcoming event. Remember, listeners, the event is in Denver, Colorado, May 25th and May 26th. For more information and to reserve your seat, go to www.franchisespeakers.com/franchise-relations-boot-camp, or better yet, just call Katrina Mitchell at Franchise Speak at 720-304-3710. Of course, you can also find the info on Franchise Essentials site at www.fmdpro.com. Scroll down an article or two, and you'll find a recent article on Profitable Partnerships Franchise Relations Bootcamp. And there are links embedded in the article for your convenience. Greg, I really appreciate you being on this special edition of Franchise Today, and the best of luck in your event.
Thanks a lot, Paul. Much appreciated for your time.
Remember, listeners, bye-bye, to join me on Franchise Today next Thursday at our regular time of 12 p.m. Central, 1 p.m. Eastern, as we complete the Legal Eagle franchise series. My guest will be Leslie Curran, and we'll be discussing the pros and cons of using franchise brokers. Until then, I'm Paul Segretto. This is Franchise Today. Have yourself a great evening, And more importantly, please be safe.